Exactly. Well, it's for the freezer, right?
Yeah.
So you just bless you dear, fly too.
The thing is, now we have a herd of nine come in the house today. We feed them.
Oh, my goodness, my friend, how are we here?
They're all for that.
If he opens the door, she comes in the house.
We have one, June has named them all, but Jenny will come up to the door the way.
That's the bottom line when you, you've gone on the board when you start naming them.
I said June names, if I didn't say Larry names, I named them Thanksgiving.
Worst problem that we ever had were that somebody had names, like mountain lions run around town. Oh, well, people like the lions in town, I'm going, gosh, that was not too bad, like.
They had a bear.
Okay, we will call this meeting to order, this is a special commission meeting of the Port of Brookings Harbor Commission, Wednesday, November 30th, 2022. Roll call, please.
Larry?
Here.
Ken?
Here.
Sharon?
Here.
Joe?
Here.
Richard?
Here. Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
No.
I'd like to make a recommendation to change on the action items, to switch the position of A and B, so Beacon Broadband doesn't have to sit here while we go through our complete financial report. Theirs is only gonna take a few minutes.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody wanna declare any potential conflicts of interest?
No.
All right. Motion to approve the agenda as amended.
With the modification. I'll make a motion, we approve the agenda.
Second.
With the modification. Okay.
I second it.
Motion on second, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. I have no public comments in front of me, are you aware of any?
I did not receive any.
Okay, well, that will bring us then to the action items, and we'll begin with Beacon Broadband, Coos Curry Electric.
First of all, I'd like to thank you all, commissioners and harbor master for inviting us down here. We think this is a possibly great improvement to us. My name is Bill Gursky, I'm the vice president for Beacon Broadband. As you're probably all aware, we're a direct subsidiary of Coos Curry Electric Cooperative, and what our goal is to provide fiber high-speed internet to everybody in the harbor, and to also provide a Wi-Fi network to the boats that are nearby that might want to be able to get Wi-Fi on their boats. So Travis has done a tremendous job working closely with us. I think we provided you all a packet that shows maps where we're following the guidelines of Coos Curry's easements and right-of-ways. So we're directly going to put our fiber and conduit within those easements and right-of-ways. There might be one little exception that we can discuss with you, but I think it's very, very minor. But I think what it's going to do for the harbor, it should be a great impact for economic development. It should really help these stores and shops down here. Most of them don't get very good internet right now. I've talked to most of them down here. The speeds are slow. We're gonna offer three packages, a 500 meg package, a 1 gig package, and a 2 gig, which 2 gig is 2,000 megabits per second. It's fastest in the world, and it's symmetrical, which means your speeds down and up are the same. So nobody else has that anywhere. It's quite an achievement in itself. We think it's going to help tourism. I've already signed up a number of the hotels down here. We're wiring them up as we speak. We're getting the hotels started up. We think it will help tourism. As people come, they can get online and be able to use the internet services. And like we said, Travis and I have talked about providing Wi-Fi to the boats. So once we get our signal down here, he can take that service and we can distribute that through a Wi-Fi network to the boats that come into the area. And when people come down here and come into a store, they'll be able to get the fastest speeds that are available. So we're honored to be able to provide service here. We're local. Our office is right up the street here on 101, right at the old bank building. And all of our people are local that work and live here. And we've been around for 83 years as an electric cooperative. We plan on being here for a long time providing high-speed service, so we're open to answering any questions you may have.
Cost to the port.
support for your installation? Is there?
Absolutely zero.
Zero.
Yeah. We're estimating our cost to be in the vicinity of $300,000 to Anglo-American investment in our fiber going into those conduits and pipes, and we'll have a lot of trucks and stuff working down there. Closely with Travis, he'll be guiding us, making sure we're doing all the right things, but there is no cost to the harbor.
How will the Wi-Fi work for the, like, fishing boats?
I'm going to actually let Travis answer that.
I think when we were talking, it was the RV park and our RV park expansions, and then in the future, if we ever decided that we wanted to issue any Wi-Fi for transit boats or anything like that, they would have the ability to. But the start of this is, I think when we got that process, it's for the RV park to continue expanding our, when we do our RV park expansion, to make sure that we have enough bandwidth to make sure everybody can stream their videos and do what they need to do with the occupancy of our park.
So will there be a monthly cost to the port to have that service available, or?
No cost at all. Zero. It's to the individual. If it's a business that wants the service, we'll sell to that business individually, and they work directly with us. Just like your electric bill, they're going to get a broadband bill. There's no charge to the port for anything.
So the RV park will get a bill for that.
If we decide right now, we're currently hooked up. I think it's Charter or Spectrum. So we're hooked up right now. Right now, you're utilizing the ditches that we have open and getting their main lines put in there. So if and when, and I'm not at the point yet where I'm ready to switch anything, but if and when the port decides we want to upgrade or go to that system, they'll go from where they are and then tie it into us. And then, yes, we will have a bill just like what we have right now for internet.
But that service is included in the daily fee, right? And that's part of your rental fee when you go take a site? I'm not talking
about
RV.
Yes, the internet, all that's included in the site fee, yes.
We would charge you one low fee to the port, and then you guys can sell that to the people that are in that development area.
Well, I personally see this as a pretty big asset for the port itself.
It is.
To be able to have this sort of access online for people that want to come here and lease one of these businesses, having that available, I think is a pretty strong feature. And the fact you're using existing right-of-ways makes it a lot simpler.
It makes it very simple, yeah. Well,
from our perspective, we know where everything is. That's been an issue here in the past is down in the RV park, not knowing where all the stuff was. So if it's all contained in a right-of-way, we at least know that right here there are things down there we need to be concerned about. So.
Yeah, we think we're very affordable. Our low rate starts at $55 a month. It gets you 500 megabits per second. So it's very, very affordable service. And we don't have any plans on rate increases. There's no contracts with anybody. It's month-to-month service. If you don't like it, you can disconnect it. So solid and faithful that we believe it's going to work. You know, I mean, we've got the name. I mean, most of you are probably members of Coos County Electric, so you're already a member, so you're aware this is coming. So I just moved here a couple months ago. I just built this out for an electric cooperative in Pennsylvania. I spent 4 years in Pennsylvania building it out. I was in charge of a broadband service there, so we did a very similar service there. I had 7 counties in Pennsylvania and rural areas, so I'm proud of it. I didn't even know where Brookings, Oregon was, to be honest with you. I was retiring and go to Key West, and Brent Bischoff, the CEO, tracked me down and asked me to come and join them for the next 3 or 4 years to help build this out. So you have such a beautiful area, and I live right up on the top of Crown Terrace, and it's just, I have a view of the harbor every night I go home. So it's absolutely beautiful. So I'm proud to be a part of this, and we really want to support you guys and hope that this really does bring more tenants down here, and then when they get online, boom, they're going to get the best internet speed available anywhere in Oregon.
Well, it's, you know, increasingly now when you go in and pay, that's all part of the process. That's got to be transmitted someplace, and
that's
the quicker the better, and the more reliable the better.
Yeah, those trenches are open, so once the trenches go in, I'll let you refer to this, but do you have a timetable?
Yeah, Brian, I'm construction manager for the whole project. Got to drive through the weather this morning. I actually live in Coos Bay, been in the area a long time. And so I was with Zipline Frontier, right, and GTD. And so, we're going, Travis. The RV park, we're kind of joining with Coos Bay and doing it so we don't have to tear it up again once it's all done. So that was a good thing to get in ahead of time. So we're using the ditches that are there and then helping with the Wi-Fi systems. For the port part of it, a little more difficult, just talking with some of the backfills in here, we're going to be doing all directional drilling, and so we're going to try to keep it to a minimum. I think this is kind of a slow time of year for a lot of the port activity in the parking lot, and so that's a good thing, because rock and stuff makes it a little bit chunky. We're going to try to be as least invasive as possible and using the current right-of-ways and easements, but, you know, chunks of rock kind of hit a drill bit, and it takes a little bit of time. So I think our plan is, if we get the okay, it'll probably take about 2 months to do the construction phase of it, and then we have to put in the fiber, splice it, test it, make sure it's a reliable service before we actually start selling.
Probably by mid-first quarter, we should have service up and running.
Just a question of my own curiosity. When you're boring that thing, how do you know what you're running up against?
They got a sawed, and these guys, I don't know the best way to put it, but you work in a trade long enough, you know kind of what different things feel like. In the river rock, you know, it kind of diverts it and stuff like that, but between the guy on the drill and they can actually physically feel the metal rod hitting different items, you know, because I was told that we may even find a car or something, you know, buried in there just for backfill. And so, but it's just kind of a feel thing. And then the guy that's on the other end is locating the other end of it to tell them how deep they are and which way to turn and, you know, where the utilities are, you know, that are underground and how to avoid them so they don't have to, you know, damage anything. So, but they've got it down to where they just, it's by feel. You know, they know what kind of dirt they're in. They know if they're in compacted gravel. They know if they're hitting river rock. It's just, you know, not their first rodeo. And just in the area that they've been, the closer to the ocean you get, the rockier it's been down here as we've been building. Because we're, as far as harbor goes, we're almost drilled out down to California. We've got some stuff on Ocean View and stuff like that. So they're probably about 6 months into the terrain. And so they got a pretty good feel of what's underground for the area. This will be a little bit different just because, you know, talking about the backfill, what all had to be done to build everything up to where it is. But they've all kind of worked here. We're using a local company. Local for boring. They're out of Eugene, but they've done a lot of work on the Oregon coast. They're kind of the main one for Coos Curry for the last, I think, 8 years. And so everything that Coos Curry's been doing, they've been using the same contractor that we're using.
We're building about 3,000 miles of fiber. It'll be over the next 4 to 5 years, all the way up to Coos. So all of Coos, all Coos and Curry County and all 20-some thousand homes will be able to get service over the next 4 years.
3,000 miles.
Yeah, we're going out just outside Powell's. Yeah. Everywhere that Coos Curry serves is
a eventual
building.
So to give you some example, I left my house in Pennsylvania. It was 2,942 miles to Brookings from my house in Pennsylvania. So exactly almost how much fiber we're going to run. It took me, I spent 5 days on the road, so. Some beautiful areas in Wyoming, by the way. You know that as you go through some of these territories. But it's a long way, a lot of miles of fiber. So we're in the process of doing that. We have 6 construction crews out there building right now, finishing up a lot of Brookings area. All along both sides of the river, all the way back out to the very end. We'll have that all activated probably in the next 2 to 3 months.
Do they have to, have you guys had to deal with the Indians down here?
No. Well, he might have.
Not yet. We haven't run into, we know kind of the different areas through the state. As far as archaeological, is there some of that out here as well?
The whole fort.
And that's what, yeah, that's the local kind of knowledge.
Well, a lot of the fort. Just a central location right out there. It's right where they have where their map shows. I don't see us running into any issues.
We've already put fiber optics back here. I mean, they ran it for the Coast Guard station back there. So.
Who ran that fiber? Do you know?
It was charter, wasn't it?
Was it just for the
Maybe it was for the Coast Guard station.
Okay.
They must have right. They probably had a grant said that you guys were going to have to go around that parking lot and not through the boat.
Yeah.
That's what charter has previously done.
Okay. And yeah, and that's all got power easements in there right now. So yeah, going around rather than through, you got to move the shipyard shop, it sounds like. And so
yeah.
The current power easement goes right through the middle of it, which is what we based our drawings off of. But thanks to Travis, we go around it and stay on the road, you know, over by the hotel and actually drop down that way instead of cutting straight across because he's like, yeah, you're going to have a shot.
With the boatyard, you never know.
Exactly.
I mean, we didn't think we were going to have to put in a waste treatment system over there, but we did.
Okay.
So that's probably a good plan to avoid that area and just leave that.
And we have talked with Civil West. There is an interesting sewer system down there. and, you know, the as-built from it or 1920, they're interesting, but Courtney Drive is deep, and so we've kind of worked around down there by the hotel on the other side of the road, we've kind of done that area, and now we're trying to get in for porch letters.
We also offer a full phone service, which will be a VoIP service, voice over internet. We offer a full video service. We'll be offering first quarter to everybody that wants a video service, and we'll also probably second and third quarter a full security system with full cameras, doorbells, everything for your house. Everything you need, cameras inside, outside, so we can be able to put cameras anywhere and hook it up to our internet.
Wow.
For your house.
I have a question. I don't know if it's going to be for you or maybe Travis, but could, once you put your line in the ground, we could not build a structure over that easement. That's a question, I guess.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah, because we're going to be utilizing the line. We're going to be, we can be within 2 feet of the existing utility, you know.
But I'm saying, when you put a line in now, 3 years from now, we want to put a building, we couldn't. We'd have to reroute
it. Exactly.
Yeah, you have all the electricity, you have your plumbing.
That's why I'm happy to stick to the, that's why they're sticking to the Coos Ferry, because those are already established things that we can't build over.
And the kite fields?
And the kite, that's already an easement that's there for utilities for all the phone,
yeah.
The electrical, they look down there. All these orange lines are currently easements that they have.
Okay, so in the future, though, we're thinking about RV park there, so...
Yeah, I mean, across these easements, when we put there, we will have... I mean, we can put, like, our RV park spots still there and stuff. You just can't build a permanent structure.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a permanent structure. Like, if we have an RV park site that's, you know, it's kind of like our back row of the RV park right now. It's 10 feet into the county right-of-way. I mean, the county right-of-way is way off into our property, so as long as we're not building permanent structures over the top of them, and those are all these things that we have to check out, review, and get sign-off, you know, from Coos Ferry and everybody else before we could even get to them.
This is part of the permitting process.
Yeah.
Clearing all that.
Oh, good.
Okay. All right, anything further? Any questions? Okay. Action item, I'd entertain a motion.
I make a motion to approve the Beacon Broadband-owned subsidiary of Coos Ferry Electric Cooperative to install fiber broadband services utilizing existing easements.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, guys, very much. We appreciate it.
See you guys.
Yep. Good luck with all you guys do down here. I spend a lot of time down here.
All right, that brings us to action item A, the annual financial report for fiscal year 2021
and 2022. Yes, Connie is here. She will be giving us a 10-15 minutes of our time to go over our audit. I'm going to let you run with it.
Okay, the reason I'm spending a little bit of time on the audit is because everything changes, especially the auditor's report. So I really would like to start with page one, the independent auditor's report. When I first started auditing a short 12 years ago, the audit report was 3 paragraphs. It is now 3 pages, and it's called for the jury standard because there's always been this assumption that the auditors are these tremendously powerful people with a crystal ball and they can do wonders, but actually we're just here making sure that your financial statement account balances are reasonable and fairly stated and they're backed up with audit evidence so that it can be proven. One of the nicest things about this independent auditor's report is we put the opinion in the first paragraph so a person doesn't have to read all 3 pages, but I will be going over all 3 pages. Starting with the opinion, I have audited the accompanying modified cash basis financial statements of the governmental activities and each major fund of the Port of Ruby Harbor as of and for the year ended June 30th, 2022, and the related notes to the financial statement, which collectively comprise Port of Brookings Harbor, Oregon's basic financial statements as listed in the table of contents. So this is government speak, saying that you are a government, you have government activities, there's more than one kind of government activity, there's also called a proprietary activity. For example, the wastewater treatment plant would be proprietary because they're selling a service to all the individuals hooked up to their system, whereas you're a government. You charge fees for marine services, for rent, for you know, RV park and stuff like that. You're not in infrastructure of wastewater, water, or utilities, anything like that. So that makes you a governmental fund. And I guess my opinion is the second paragraph here. In my opinion, the financial statements referred to above present fairly in all material respects the respective modified cash basis, financial position of the governmental activities and each major fund of the Port of Brookings Harbor, Oregon as of June 30th, 2022, and the respective changes in modified cash basis financial position for the year then ended in accordance with modified cash basis of accounting described in Note 1. So basically, it presents the financial statements present fairly in all material respects the financial position. That means you have a clean position, a clean audit. If it were not clean, I would have a word in here, except for. And that would be modified. I do not have any except for in here. So that means you guys have a clean opinion.
Wow.
Okay.
That's not unusual for us.
No. There were some contentious issues kind of in the past, but auditors, you know, if I were running into problems and stuff like that, I would have to come to the port manager and to the board and all that kind of stuff and resolve the problems before I issue an audit report, unless management refuses that, no, we don't want to do that, we're not going to do that. For example, right now, Governmental Accounting Standards Board has come out with number 87 for leases. Since you're the cash basis of accounting, you do not have to account for your lease revenues. So all these tenants that pay lease income to you every month, the Financial Accounting Standards Board wanted to change that to where you had to put on your balance sheet the actual assets and then the liability for what you plan to receive. So it was Portland, for example, had to go out and hire 1.5 more people to do this. Because basically you're taking the schedule of the building, you're breaking it down into what is being rented out. This now becomes a lease asset instead of an owned building. And then you have the contracts where you're going to be collecting money anywhere from 5 to 40 years in some cases. And so what you have to do is you have to take that future revenue and book it at its present value. And so you've got this present value calculation on your liabilities. You've got your lease assets under your assets, and that's amortized. And so you have to expire the lease liability, capture the computed interest off of that for the present value, and then instead of depreciating the lease, you're writing it down based on amortization of the schedule like depreciation is. And so it's a mind-boggling. I've done it for a couple of places, and you know, basis for my opinion, you know, actually it's emphasis of the matter, basis of accounting. Draw attention, note one of the financial statements, your modified cash basis. Being modified cash basis is that the biggest thing we're looking at is what's in the checking account. You know, did we have enough money to pay everything that we needed to last year? Do we think we have enough to pay what's coming in? Do we have enough income coming in for next year to meet our debt service? That's the difference between cash and accrual. Cash, you have your cash account balance here as of June 30, 2022. if you were full accrual, you would also have on there your long-term debt that you plan on expiring, and then you would have your leases revenue coming in at present value, and you would be doing some trickery to reconcile how the future revenue is going to cover your future long-term debt. Not that big of a deal, but it's labor intensive. And unless you want to double your accounting office, cash is the way to go.
Working.
Yes. So basis for opinions, I conducted my audit in accordance with auditing standards generally accepted in the United States of America. So there's two kinds of auditing standards. This one is generally accepted auditing standards, which just means you fall under the governmental accounting rules and promulgation. There's another one called governmental auditing services. That one, you will be subject to that in the event that you spend federal money more than $750,000 in 1 year. So I have an auditor's report right here for generally accepted auditing standards. If and when you get to that point where you spend that much money, you're going to have another auditor's report. And that other auditor's report is going to be even longer than this one, and it's going to be kind of expensive. I won't do it. You'll have to hire someone else to do that, which is an additional fee. And then that one will be reporting on more information than what I'm reporting on, because I'm just reporting on your financial statements, your account balances. When you get into the governmental auditing standards, what they're doing is they're also reporting on how well management is doing their internal control to make sure that there's all the I's are being dotted and T's are being crossed to make sure the financial accounting balances are correct.
Well, we will be there.
Yeah. Responsibilities of management for the financial statements, bottom of page one. Management is responsible for preparation and fair presentation of these financial statements in accordance with modified cash basis of accounting, as described in note one. You're also responsible for the design, implementation, and maintenance of internal control relevant to the preparation and fair presentation of financial statements that are free from material misstatement, whether due to fraud or error. And basically, this means that the court is the one that chose modified cash basis accounting. The court has a financial advisor that helps them to put this report together under the Governmental Accounting Standards Board and GFOA, Governmental Finance Officers Association recommendations. And there's also AICPA in here. And so you have hired someone to come in and recommend that you use the cash basis, and they do your financial statements for you. I didn't come over you with a baseball bat and say you have to do this. I had no choice. You know, I did not make any of those decisions. Management is responsible for those decisions. Page two. So as the auditor, my objectives are to obtain reasonable assurance about whether the financial statements as a whole are free from material misstatement, whether due to fraud or error, and to issue an auditor's report that includes my opinion. Now, reasonable assurance is a high level of assurance, not an absolute assurance, and therefore it is not a guarantee that an audit conducted in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards will always detect a material misstatement when it exists. The risk of not detecting a material misstatement resulting from fraud is higher than one resulting from error, as fraud may involve collusion, forgery, intentional omissions, misrepresentations, or the override of internal control. So this is where the governmental auditing standards would come in, and they would actually go deeper than what I do. They would actually go in and make sure there's no override of internal control, there's no forgery, intentional omissions. Now, I do look, but I look for material You know, for example, if you've got somebody going out and buying $20, charging $20 items to the lumber yard, and those $20 items do not get put into the port, instead they go home and put it into their garage, so to speak, that's not material to me. I don't have time to look for $20 here and there. At the end of the year, what, you might be losing, you know, $100 a month, $1,200 a year. That's management's responsibility to find stuff like that. My responsibility is like, okay, what if this hits like $12,000? What if somebody is actually taking $1,000 a month from you guys? Well, that one I would spot, and that one I would bring to your attention, and I didn't find that. But I'm just saying that, you know, I'm focusing on your account balances, and I've got audit evidence that I can go to somebody else, third party, and say, okay, port says their account balance is this. Can you give me proof? You know, like IFA, Business Oregon, they give me proof. They say, okay, they owe this much. I look at your financial statements. That's how much you put in there. You know, that's my audit evidence. and performing an audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards, I exercise professional judgment and maintain professional skepticism throughout the audit. It's trust but verify. I identify and assess the risks of material misstatement of the financial statements, whether due to fraud or error, and design and perform audit procedures responsive to those risks. Such procedures include examining on a test basis evidence regarding the amounts and disclosures in the financial statements. Now, I have seen, never here, but I have seen where nobody reconciles the checking account. And how can you have a good bank balance if you don't reconcile a checking account? Most people personally don't reconcile a checking account, but the court is required to, and I have seen courts that don't. And so, no problem there, but I'm supposed to identify that. If I come across it, I have to identify it and assess it, and I have to change my audit program. My procedures I'm going to do, and I'm going to have to dig deeper. In this case, you guys do reconcile your checking account. All of the outstanding checks do clear within the next 60 days. No problems there. Then I obtain an understanding of internal control relevant to the audit in order to design audit procedures that are appropriate in circumstances, but not for the purpose of expressing an opinion on the effectiveness of the Port of Brooklyn Harbor, Oregon's internal control. Accordingly, no such opinion is expressed. So basically, even though I look to see if somebody making the deposit is different than the person recording it in the account, is somebody making a purchase, making sure it's coded to an expense, and somebody else is looking at what expense it's coded to, and making sure that it's within the budgetary guidelines, you have checks and balances going on so that, like, one person doesn't have 100% control and they can do whatever they want. You want to have your checks and balances, your internal control, oversight. And so I do not do an opinion on this oversight. That would be a governmental auditing standard. That's when they do an opinion on the oversight. Then I evaluate the appropriateness of accounting policies used and the reasonableness of significant accounting estimates made by management, as well as evaluate the overall presentation of financial statements. Well, being under the modified cash basis of accounting, you don't have many disclosures as you do under generally accepted accounting principles. So I have gone through and I've compared all of your note disclosures with the GFOA, Government Financial Officers Association checklist. They provide this 26-page checklist of saying if a government is really producing good financial statements on a cash basis, they're going to have every single one of these checks, you know, points in their financial statement. And you guys do. I mean, I could just go through that 26-page checklist, and yes, you guys are disclosing everything you are supposed to be disclosing for modified cash basis. And then I conclude whether, in my judgment, there are conditions or events considered in the aggregate that raise substantial doubt about the Port of Brooklyn Harbor, Oregon's ability to continue as a going concern for a reasonable period of time. So basically, this is where I'm looking at, you know, do you have enough tenant revenue coming in? Like, for example, if you've never rented another RV space, if you never rented another boat space, do you have buildings that tenants are paying enough money that you're going to meet your debt service? And you do. And so, like, the marina, the RV park, you know, all these other areas that you're collecting revenue from, they're covering your operations. So I can see where definitely, you know, a reasonable period of time, which would be like 12 months from now, I do not see you guys going bankrupt. I do see cash flow coming in. I do see continuing repairs and maintenance, cash flow going out. But I don't see you going upside down and having to apply for bankruptcy.
That's healthy.
Yeah. And then supplementary information. Even though I formed an opinion on your basic financial statements, there's some supplementary information you have in there. For example, property tax collection. It kind of goes in there and says how much property tax you imposed, how much was collected, how much was just still outstanding, because not everybody pays their property tax on time. Mm-hmm. So there's a schedule in there for that. And then there's a schedule in there for your long-term debt. You know, like whether it's going to be paid off now or 20 years from now, you've got it scheduled out there. So you can actually look at that and say, okay, I know that this is going to go away within 2 years, and so we'll have money to do this major project, you know, that kind of thing. And then other information, page 3, management is responsible for the other information included in the annual report. Now, this other information is the transmittal letter. I do not audit the transmittal letter. I do read it, make sure that it's the numbers in it are correct. The reason I don't audit it is because this is a great chapter of what the court does, what it wants to do, what its goals for the future are, what problems has it already faced, you know, recent storms, et cetera. And so it's a great big huge narrative that's all, there's no dollars in it for me to audit. You know, it's just all ideas and programs and projects and dreams. And so I read it, but I don't audit that because I can't audit dreams or future projections or anything like that. So that's my auditor's report. And then I have a second auditor's report. Very last page, 4445. So not only do I audit for the generally accepted auditing standards, I also audit for the state of Oregon. And Oregon requires municipal auditors to look at certain things to make sure that the governments are in compliance. These are the bullet points. I'm supposed to audit to make sure your deposit of public funds with financial institutions meet ORS Chapter 295. There's a note disclosure in your financial statement saying that you do hold your money at banks that offer FDIC, and when your account is more than the $250,000 limit, it has to be in a bank that participates in the collateralization program with the state of Oregon. Basically, that means these banks cannot loan out government funds. They have to keep those government funds in whole in their assets and stuff like that. And so the banks that you do bank with do follow that. Your authorized investment is surplus funds. This is where if you don't have all of your money at, you know, Umpqua Bank, whatever bank, you put it with the Oregon Local Investment Pool. And so this qualifies as a safe place because all of that money is backed by government securities, not stocks and bonds, Coca-Cola, stuff like that. So all of your money is safe. I looked at it, verified it. So basically, I'm signing the Oregon that says you are in compliance with your cash and extra money. Then your indebtedness, limitations, restrictions, and repayment. Now, I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's a section in the Oregon administration rules showing exactly how much courts can borrow. And it takes your assessed real estate value, and I think you're allowed for the assessed value of all the taxpayers in your district, you're allowed to borrow up to 0.025% of the assessed value. That's the kind of debt that you can carry as a court. Basically, the state is saying that if all these property taxpayers kept paying their payments on time, the port could afford to carry this much debt because they know that you're going to get this much money coming in from taxpayers in the future. You do meet those limitations. In fact, you, fortunately, you're not even up to your maximum. I think your maximum is pretty high. I don't know. I didn't bring that information with me. And then budgets legally required in Oregon. You're fine with Oregon local budget law. You have your budget committee meetings, your budget hearings. You do the resolutions where you adopt, impose, assess taxes. So you're good there. Programs funded from outside sources. Now, this would be, for example, I think you've got some, whenever you have a business Oregon thing and they give you money to do something, you have to spend it on what you told them you were going to spend it on. And you did do that. And public contracts and purchasing, this is where you make sure you'll go out and get your bids when you have a contract that you want to go out for that reaches certain thresholds. Depending on the threshold is depending on what bid process you're going to go through, whether it's informal or formal. And so I have, my opinion, the state of Oregon is you did everything you were supposed to do according to these Oregon administrative rules. So that's it in a nutshell for what, as an auditor, the reports that I provide to the court to say that everything is good and reasonable. Now, when we go to the financial statements, we can take a look at them, but the date on them is June 30th, 2022. So I can tell you exactly on June 30th, 2022, on page 4, what your checking account balance was. But here we are, November 30th, and I have read your board meeting information, and I see the financial report that the board members get, and I would suggest, go ahead and look at your November 30th balance in December. Compare it with your June 30th balance that's in this financial statement. Everything changes, but I can tell you that as of this date and for the year ended June 30th, 2022, all the amounts that were deposited, all the amounts that were spent was reasonable, fairly stated. I did not run across any problems. Any questions? It's an amazing report.
I'm glad you came and told us what I read this.
Yeah.
Very thoroughly, and frankly, I didn't understand everything. I was looking for an attaboy in there someplace, but now I get it.
Yeah, I know. We just hide it on the accountants and auditors are obsessed with our language, and it takes about 10 years to learn the language. And why we can't put it in layman's terms, I don't know. I guess that's why I'm here to kind of translate all this accounting ease.
Yeah, I appreciate that because I was kind of, I think we're okay here,
yeah.
But I can't really see it in there in place.
Yeah, you're looking for the word fair and reasonable.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I would comment that this is a pretty detailed document. And awful lot of information in there.
Yeah.
And I kind of enjoyed reading it. I thought, yeah.
Yeah, some good stuff in there.
Okay. All right, well, thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Thank you, Connie.
So now we know why a lot of things happen that we see, except financial reports, which I thought were pretty voluminous. I think now I understand why
they have a purpose.
Yeah.
They do all have a purpose.
Okay. Action item. Would you like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the draft annual financial report for fiscal year 2021-2022 and submit to the state of Oregon.
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Ted?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Okay. So that brings us to information items, the capital improvement plan updates.
Thank you,
sir. So I was contacted by Business Oregon. It's one of the things with the strategic business plan that they're currently a little bit behind on, but are trying to develop court's top three priorities as far as their capital improvement plans go.
Mm-hmm.
So they can start getting a better picture of the common needs between courts. And if they find common needs within ports, say boardwalks, docks, you know, if you find that you're having multiple ports find the same thing, Business Oregon is attempting to compile this information and try to help ports get the funding needed without having to go through the steps of applying for the federal grant. They would apply for them and then help distribute that amongst the ports that it is. So it's a very helpful, great thing that they're working towards. It's not implemented yet, but this was the first step. So I pulled out our last capital improvement plan that was updated in 2019. The staff and I went over it. We updated what we have currently going on, the projects we have going. We've revised them as far as rank. And then with the ranking that we have with all of these, I went through and picked out what I thought was our top three, and I turned these into Business Oregon. Now, I told them it wasn't approved yet by the board as our top three, and that it's subjected to change. But my reasoning for the top three priorities are boatyard shops. We know it's a big one that we're going to be looking at. I put an estimated cost of $1.5 million and a potential funding source of grants and loans. Loans is in there because it is a revenue source. It has come with lead tenants, and it has the ability to pay for itself as it goes. Hallmark receiving dock was another one I put in there. You know, it's an operational dock right now, but it's something that we need to be looking at in the future of how we're going to replace. And I think if we can get help getting that dock, and I think other ports will find have that the same need. I put grants and loans for that as well, just because it is a receiving dock and it has a revenue source. And number three, I put a boardwalk expansion replacement. I put just grants on that. It doesn't really have a viable revenue source back to us. So loans, I would be very cautious about getting any type of loans for a boardwalk expansion unless we had to. So I put that as number one, two, and three, and I turned this into Business Oregon. I want you guys, the reason I wanted us to look at this is to gather any more information. I know you guys just got this, so, but I'm going to be asking you guys to kind of to approve this capital improvement plan in our December meeting. So throughout between now and then, I would like you guys to look over this and see if there's any other suggestions. We might have one more information item on this I feel like we need to talk about it more. But get something done and finalized, and then I can give Business Oregon a confirmed top three priorities that we have, and then improve the capital improvement plan. And then this will be one step closer to like a 2023 annual update of our strategic business plan as part of it. So. Is there any questions? I know you guys probably haven't had a lot of time to see it. So when I went through and ranked our actual plan, I put our projects that we currently have going, the wastewater treatment plant, FEMA, and where we have funding kind of available, and these are realistic projects I think that we'll be able to knock down in the near future. After you get past 13 or 14, it starts becoming a little more vague at when those things might come to light or actually happen. But it kind of lists out the things that we have right now that we've previously been on there that are still current issues that we're going to be looking at over the next 5 to 10 years.
I would just comment on the top three that you've identified here with the thought that this is going to go to Business Oregon for them to look for grants. I like the mix, because we have a combination of a rental space in the shop. we've got a fisheries development project, and then we have a recreational tourism type thing. So we've got a good mix of opportunity for various kind of grants.
Right.
And I know there are some fishing industry infrastructure monies moving into the system, which might show up for Hallmark, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what kind of economic development money there is, but that would certainly apply to the shop if that
right.
came out. So I think you did a good job of kind of mixing the projects to give us a broader opportunity to get
right.
available grants. And I don't know what's out there, but I know, I suspect that Congress isn't going to stop trying to pump the economy up a little bit by throwing money out there for various things, and that's hopefully helping.
And that's what Business Oregon kind of hit on, is that the government, they're giving a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of money out there. The problem that ports of our size, small districts have, is going through the hoops to obtain the money, going through the application processes. And that's the difficult problem that I think has been well shared amongst many ports, on many small districts. And I think this is Business Oregon's way of trying to help us get through those bigger grants and put us in a better opportunity to get them.
Well, and a lot of these grants are competitive grants. So
right.
the more, I mean, if Oregon comes in and says, we have $37 million worth of projects, that's a lot bigger competitive type thing than if we come in and say, we need $2.5 million or $1 million to do this versus everybody in the United States. So I think that's a I think this is a really good opportunity
right.
for Oregon to score some money in that fashion. I mean, I don't know how all this stuff works, but I do know that it's sausage. Somewhere they're throwing a bunch of stuff in a grinder and we're getting out the other end. But, okay.
And tourism is a huge.
Yeah, there's, I think, like I said, I think that's a pretty competitive or pretty. Good list of things to cover a lot of ground.
And maybe those make
I have some questions.
Yes.
On the boat shop, you said that would pay its own way. We're already using the income from those businesses to pay existing loans. So how are you coming up with that rationale?
I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
The money that we are taking in from the boat shop rentals
mm-hmm.
are being used to pay other debt. So if we're going to go out and take a new loan, how's that paying its own way?
Well, with the talk that we've already had in expanding that shop is to add more leasable space, more shop space, so we can help cover and balance whatever loans or whatever that we had to take. Because right now we have four leases that are over there, and the latest plan before Gary left showed seven leasable spaces, and they were bigger than what we currently have right now, which would up our revenue sources.
Okay. We can no longer borrow money from the IFA, correct?
I wouldn't say that's true. And the last time we got a loan, our RV park loan, they asked us to go look elsewhere to a loan first, and if we could not get one, then we would be able to come back to them.
Okay. That's all.
Okay. Port property sale.
This is just confirmation. The property sale closed. We received a check for $174,236. That money was deposited into our general fund account and then moved and then transferred into our reserve fund. This money that we have will stay in our reserve fund. It can only be used for our wastewater treatment plant matching funds. If we do not utilize this money or all of it towards matching funds for the wastewater treatment plant, we will be required to pay this money to IFA for our debt. So this is just information saying that this sale is final and that is completed.
Good job.
Okay. Brings us to the pilot replacement.
So this is the piling, that's the end of NDOC. ODOC. It's the wood piling that was broken. We turned this piling into our insurance company. The insurance company paid for the piling. We scheduled, we got quotes. Billiter Marine was the contractor with a low bid. We did already have them purchase the piling, and now it's coming down to scheduling of it, and they are saying that they're shooting to be here around December 19th or 20th, which should fall right into line with the completion of our JPA, our joint permit application for the piling. The last thing we're waiting on from them is the 15-day comment period from Oregon Department of State Land. So after that's over, we should be issued our last permit.
I get government, but it seems rather odd to me that we would have to go through a complete NEPA process to replace a broken pile. It's not a new construction, it's just pulling the old one out and putting the new one in. And that seems to me
that ought to be. Especially asked for them to reduce the comment period from 30 days to 15 days because the contract was coming. They wanted 30 days for a comment period, and it didn't fit into our construction schedule.
Seems, well, that's logical, I guess. It would seem to me that it would be a reasonable position by the Department of State Lands to say, we've got this blanket permitting process for repairs and maintenance, but you don't have to go through all this huge process. Now, new construction, big dredging project, yeah, I get that. But just pull a stick out of the ground and put another one in its place, that doesn't seem to me that ought to require that. But I'm preaching to the choir here. But anyway, seems odd. Okay, any commissioner comments? Well, compliments to you and Kim, whoever put this together.
Well,
yeah. Kim did it.
For the process that we use, because obviously it is satisfies our audit requirements and keeps us in the right place.
Kim is very thorough, because even though after she does her balancing, then she gives it to me, and I go through and check her balance. And
Kim does a fantastic job.
So, I mean, it's just, she's very
We've had very successful audits over the past few years. I know before that we did have some bumps in our road, but it's been quite a few years in a row now where we've had great audits, and the control measures and the staff that we've had of making sure we're up to date on it has done a great job of making sure we're compliant.
Well, we should be happy where we are, because if we have a government audit, federal government audit, it will be pretty thorough. My experience with spending federal money at the state level is when they come in, it's a big deal.
Which we will. We'll have one for just the wastewater treatment plant. We'll have one just for FEMA. We'll probably have one for hazard mitigation, state hazard mitigation. So we'll have some pretty big single audits coming up just for those projects.
I feel very comfortable with those audits coming.
Yeah. Well, given where we are now, that's no problem.
As long as it continues,
don't pay attention to business, then you can get yourself in big trouble. I mean, I've actually seen states lose their federal funding. They're gone. Because they spent it on the wrong thing, among other things. But so it's a little different than what we just did here.
Yep.
It's
a lot different.
Do you guys even have to have one of those governmental audits because of the wastewater treatment plant?
Like you said, anytime we spend federal money, we're going to have to do that. So
they're over $750,000.
Yeah.
And it's going to. There's a lot of work that goes into those.
$3.5 million.
So.
Okay. Anything further? All right. Our next regular meeting day will be Wednesday, December 21st, 2022, at 2 o'clock in this room. And with that, we are adjourned.
Goodbye.
Bye.